Speaking of bugs, viruses. Professor Tom Jefferson joins me now to talk a little bit about some findings from a number of cities of the world that the COVID-19 pandemic could very well have lain dormant in various parts of the world and only emerged in the environmental conditions that allow it to thrive. So in other words, it may not very well have started in China. Professor Tom Jefferson, Senior Associate Tutor at the Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine at the University of Oxford, is on the line. Good morning, Professor. Welcome to Breakfast with Refilwe.
Thank you, Refilwe.
All right. Wow. Thanks for saying my name properly. So, Professor, talk to us a little bit about the study and what prompted it.
What we're doing is synthesizing available evidence. So we're not carrying studies, but we're looking at the studies which are available, which are increasing in number exponentially, as you can imagine, as the pandemic goes on. The studies we look at are environmental studies, so possible triggers of the pandemic, like, for instance, meteorological conditions or weather conditions, ambient conditions. And then we started looking at another series of studies which report the presence of the virus, SARS-CoV-2 virus, in sewage and wastewater around the world.
Right.
And we started with European studies. We then went on to Brazilian studies, backwards tracing the first appearance of these, or first isolation, or fragments of these viruses. And the earliest we've got is March 2019 from the Spanish city of Barcelona.
So that's incredible. So this is a year and some change ago. The common understanding is that it flared up, or it was created, or excuse me, it began in Wuhan in China around about January. Maybe some are even saying all the way back to November. But you're saying even 8 months before that, there were traces of the coronavirus COVID-19 in Spain.
Trace is correct. I have to explain to our listeners a few things.
Please.
First of all, that a single study, the single study findings, need to be repeated. But we seem to have an increasing number of studies finding earlier and earlier isolates. That's the first thing that I need to point out. The second thing is finding pieces of the coronavirus causing COVID doesn't necessarily mean that these are infectious. Indeed,
right.
This is one of the limits of the current testing. So with these two provisos that people need to be aware of, it looks as if the inhabitants of the Spanish city of Barcelona were excreting the virus some considerable number of months before it was identified in Wuhan in China. That does not tell us where the virus came from, and it is possible that, like all respiratory viruses, this has been around for a very long time. It's possible, but of course we don't know. There's a whole branch of genetics, microbiological genetics, that looks at this. And I know that there's work being carried out at the moment, the fingerprint, the genetic evolution, of these viruses, try and find out exactly where they came from.
And I mean, you've also found traces in samples from Brazil back in November.
Yes.
So
yes, in a place called Santa Catalina in Brazil. These are reported. Again, these are studies which need replicating. But it looks as if it's a sort of trend of backward discovery. These are from samples which are routinely taken for testing of wastewater and are usually frozen. And when the pandemic started, these samples were taken out and then tested.
Right.
And we're looking at a sort of backwards tracing of it.
So when you, let's talk a little bit about the survival of the traces or even of the virus under frozen conditions. You know, there's always the stigma that's attached to wet markets, for example, particularly the understanding or the belief that that's where the origination of the disease was. Is it possible that that humans are not the only carriers, that one might find that abattoirs or any other meat packing space could be a carrier of the disease, such that, say, exported food that is frozen may be one of the reasons that it moves to another country?
Surface contamination with this particular virus is known to be a transmission vehicle. We have a very large number of studies. One of the best studies, in fact, comes from South Africa. And it was a study that looked at an outbreak inside a hospital. And it was quite clear that the transmission was indirect. That is, not person to person directly, but through what are known as fomites, the pieces of dust or dirt attached to surfaces which you can't really see. There are some beautiful plans from this study drawn out, which show two cases of COVID in the same ward, the neurological ward, but they were several meters apart. So it's very unlikely that droplets would have caused the transmission directly. It's more like a contact, through contact of surfaces, and possibly contact through food as well. That's also possible. You spoke about survival of the virus. We know that this virus survives longer in cooler climates with low humidity. The lower the temperature, the more stable it is. The higher the temperature, the higher the content exposure to ultraviolet light. The more labile, the more fragile the virus becomes. And it can activate within a matter of hours or minutes, depending on the temperature that it's exposed to.
So what does this all tell us then? The fingerprinting, the understanding of how it can survive so well and thrive in these colder environments, what does that help us do? Does it help us in terms of understanding potentially the vaccine, or is it more about just behavioral understanding?
The most important thing is that if we know how this for certain, what the conditions that favor transmission and what the type of transmission the virus has, then we can do something about it. And I mean by we, I mean the globe, because this is a global problem.
Yes.
That's the immediate. Of course, if we find out that there is a proportion of oral fecal transmission in these cases, which has not been proven, by the way, we know that strict hand hygiene and strict hygiene of surfaces will actually work very well. We have quite a lot of studies of hand washing in children, especially in schools, that show that the more interest that teachers and parents take, the more the hand washing is thorough and routinely done, and the lower the number of illnesses. So that's the kind of practical implication. Then there's a longer-term implication, which is the fact that we have always treated these respiratory viruses with disinterest. We're not really interested. We are not really interested in the ones that we know, and we do not know how many there are out there which are unknown to us, like SARS-CoV-2 was unknown to us before December. And we have to be careful. We also have to understand whether our behavior and our policies as humans are actually creating microenvironments for the growth and for the development of these microorganisms. Because if that is so, we require, first of all, I think we require in a democratic society a frank debate about this, whether this is acceptable. And once we've had that debate, we need to make a decision whether we're going to do something about it.
Indeed. All right. Professor Tom Jefferson, thank you so much for that. Senior Associate Tutor for the Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine at the University of Oxford. On the line there.